John watched the gore seep across their rug, shocked into inaction for all of 2 seconds, until he saw the look on Sherlock's face. Trying not to think too much, he tossed the useless gun at the feet of the man at the door, and, snatching up his jacket, he covered Wilkes's head. Then he moved to stand in front of Sherlock. "Don't," he said softly. "Sherlock, look at me." Sherlock pulled his gaze from the floor and met John's eyes, nodding silently. The knife slipped from his fingers and fell to the rug.
"I do apologize, Mr. Holmes. I understand he was an old friend, but needs must."
"Look, you're too late," John said sharply. All he wanted to do was get Sherlock away from this thing bleeding into the carpet, and he couldn't. "The Ministry recovered what you're after days ago, and..."
"Yes, yes."
The man moved inside and seated himself in the chair close to the door. It was amazing how harmless he looked, like someone's granddad. If your granddad could shoot you between the eyes on the first try.
"I've heard this story. I don't need to hear it again."
He waved a hand toward the sofa.
"Please, sit down. I'm sure we can be civilized about this."
"Civilized? There's a dead man on our rug, and God knows how many out in the street."
"No one is dead in the street, Doctor. I was very careful. Please, sit down."
The tone was polite, but held an edge. John and Sherlock exchanged glances. Sherlock moved to the sofa and sat down. John sat beside him.
"Now, I can see from the display on your mantle that you have solved the puzzle. I can deduce from the fact that there are 25 pieces there that you know that the chip is concealed within the 26th. The 26th piece has not been delivered to the Ministry. It must be here."
"Sound reasoning,"
Sherlock said quietly.
"We're not giving you the chip."
"Queen and country, Mr. Holmes?"
"Professional ethics, if you like. Or perhaps I just don't feel inclined to cooperate with people who point guns at me."
The man chuckled.
"I can respect that. Mr. Holmes, I'm a lifelong public servant, being forced into premature retirement."
"That tends to happen when you operate an extortion ring on the side, even when your name is Sir Edward Burke."
"Some might think that forcing the wicked to pay for their hidden high crimes and misdemeanors is the act of a righteous man."
"Some might think that profiting at the expense of others' misdemeanors is a high crime."
Burke actually grinned.
"We'll agree to differ. This business with the chip was intended to fund a comfortable retirement. A simple theft, a simple sale, and no one hurt."
"People have been hurt," John said, unable to keep quiet any longer. "And I don't remember you being so peace-loving outside Angelo's."
"Oh, come now. A little sparring between retired soldiers? You're very good, by the way. When I heard you were a surgeon, I didn't think you would present much of a challenge."
"If you'd like, we can step outside and have another go."
"John,"
Sherlock murmured.
"At any rate, I chose my operatives unwisely, to say the least. Mr. Wilkes assured me quite convincingly that he was an experienced liaison in such matters. Instead, I found myself dealing with a rank amateur who fancied this a game of James Bond in Mummy's Garden. He used his personal mobile to arrange the sale. I ask you, a man already under the eye of the Home Office, contacting a buyer on his personal mobile. I should have been disappointed beyond all reason if Mycroft Holmes had not apprehended my buyer and recovered the box."
"May I ask whose idea it was to use a puzzle box?"
Sherlock's voice was very quiet. Burke actually rolled his eyes.
"That was Mr. Wilkes. Such a clever man, our Mr. Wilkes."
Burke cast a contemptuous look at the corpse on the rug.
"He put the chip in the box when Mr. Cullen brought it to him. Nothing this man did was well done. His choice of Mr. Cullen, for example, was incomprehensible. Cullen was both unprincipled and unstable, and placed the entire operation in jeopardy. Imagine murdering a ministry courier. It is the height of stupidity and unprofessional conduct. Quite disgusting. And I can assure you that your abduction was never part of the plan. I did try to remind Mr. Cullen of that, as you recall. In any case, I sincerely regret any inconvenience.
Inconvenience. John's hand curled into a fist at the memory of Sherlock's face while he was being beaten. He tried to answer, and couldn't.
And these particulars and regrets are supposed to persuade me to give you the chip.
Sherlock sounded amused.
No. These particulars and regrets are supposed to make you understand why I will shoot your friend if you don't give me the chip.
What little color remained in Sherlock's face faded. Burke shrugged.
Nothing personal, Doctor.
It's never personal, John heard himself saying.
I could shoot Mr. Holmes, of course.
Then do it,
Sherlock said. John's breath caught in his throat.
But I happen to have a great deal of personal and professional respect for his brother, and I would not wish to grieve him if I can in any way avoid it.
John started breathing again.
You see, I have my own sort of professional ethics.
John heard the front door open and turned toward the sound, startled. Who?
Mr. Holmes, is everything all right up there?
John concealed his relief with an effort. Mycroft's team. And about damn time, too.
Everything's fine,
Sherlock called back. His voice barely shook.
Go have some coffee.
John cast him an amazed look. Coffee. He told them to have coffee.
Sir?
I said, go have some coffee.
Sherlock's gaze never left Burke's face.
Yes, sir.
The door closed, and the room was silent for all of 2 seconds.
I sincerely hope that was not what I think it was,
Burke said softly.
My ability to reassure you depends entirely on what you think it was,
Sherlock replied in a wry tone.
I think you just gave the coded response for an intruder.
Then I'm afraid your hope has been dashed. My condolences.
John lowered his head and grinned at nothing in particular. Burke rose from his chair.
The chip, please. Immediately.
There's no point,
Sherlock said quietly.
The word's been given. They'll be up those stairs in 2 minutes.
Burke strode across the room and shoved the muzzle of his pistol under John's chin.
Please do not make me do this.
John closed his eyes, wondering if he could possibly grab the weapon before it went off. It seemed unlikely, but he was tempted to try, just to deny this tosser the satisfaction. He felt Sherlock rise from the sofa.
Wise choice,
Burke said. John opened his eyes and watched Sherlock open the bottom drawer of John's desk and pull out his surgical kit. He unzipped it and removed a small, irregularly shaped piece of carved wood.
Here you go.
Sherlock tossed it in a high, long arc. It sailed over Burke's head toward the door.
Thank you, Sherlock.
John jerked his head toward the voice in time to see Mycroft slip the little piece of wood into the breast pocket of his coat. If anyone had told John that he'd be glad to see Mycroft Holmes today, he'd have told them to bugger off in no uncertain terms. How the hell he'd climbed that flight of stairs without making a sound, John couldn't imagine. And right now, he couldn't care less. Mycroft didn't appear to be armed. But after everything John had seen in the past few days, he wouldn't be fazed if the man kept a missile launcher in his umbrella. Mycroft regarded Burke with a disapproving expression.
Well, we've had a busy night, haven't we, Edward?
Mycroft?
Burke acknowledged him with a grim smile.
Terrorism, murder, and...
Mycroft waved his hand dismissively at John.
This bad melodrama.
Oh, fine, thanks. Out of the corner of his eye, John could see Sherlock moving toward him and cursed Mycroft soundly for not getting his brother out of the room immediately.
It's persuasion,
Burke returned mildly.
And it's very effective.
Yes, so I see. See not secured, objective not acquired, and escape not possible. You are doing splendidly. All that's missing is the cyanide capsule.
Burke's lips twitched.
I have your brother.
You have my brother's flatmate.
It's all one, Mycroft, in case you hadn't noticed. Just look at him, trying to creep up on me like a three-legged tiger.
Sherlock froze where he was, an arm's length from John. Mycroft, get your brother out of here, John said, knowing his desperation was showing and not giving a damn. What the hell are you playing at? Mycroft ignored him.
This is painful to watch. This is amateurish, Edward. You don't have my brother or anything else worth having. It's time to call it a night.
If you think I'm standing in the dock after 35 years of service, you can think again.
The thought never crossed my mind.
Call off your team and get me a car. The doctor and I are going for a drive.
He can barely walk,
Sherlock said, his gaze locked on John's face.
I'll go.
I'm fine, John said to Burke, not able to look Sherlock in the eyes. I'll walk. Burke chuckled.
You see, Mycroft?
Mycroft regarded them with upraised eyebrows for a moment.
Yes, yes, I see.
He sighed.
Oh, very well then, Edward. It seems bad melodrama is the uniform of the day. Let's go.
John shot Sherlock a quick glance, but Sherlock was watching his brother. Burke gave Mycroft a startled glance.
Sorry?
I'll be your hostage. You weren't expecting me to ask on bended knee, I hope.
Burke smiled faintly and pulled his weapon away from John's throat, then backed away from John and Sherlock slowly.
Mycroft?
Sherlock's voice was tense.
Oh, don't fret, Sherlock.
Mycroft gave him an odd smile.
Everything will be fine.
Of course it will,
Burke said in an annoyed tone, turning to aim his weapon at Mycroft.
We're not savages here.
We all have to go sometime,
Mycroft continued as he began to walk down the stairs, Burke following closely behind him.
If it goes wrong, Sherlock, tell Mummy I died for true love. That will please her.
Oh, for heaven's sake, Mycroft, you're being ridiculous.
Burke sounded profoundly aggravated. Sherlock helped John to his feet. John stared after the man in disbelief. Is he serious?
Very. Stay here.
Sherlock moved silently to the top of the stairs. John grit his teeth and hobbled after him. Sherlock shot him an exasperated look and put out his arm to hold John back. John peered down the stairs.
Shall I put my hands up? That will make me look thoroughly cold, don't you think?
Mycroft's voice echoed from the stairwell as he raised his hands.
I don't. I think you've gone.
Mycroft whirled, seizing Burke's gun hand by the wrist and forcing it into the air. Burke fired, sending a cloud of plaster dust down from the ceiling as Mycroft slammed Burke's arm against the wall. The pistol fell from Burke's hand and tumbled down the stairs. Mycroft promptly drove his knee into Burke's groin. Burke doubled over, and Mycroft flipped him over his shoulder to land huddled at the foot of the stairwell.
Below the belt! Below the belt!
Burke gasped as Mycroft drew a pair of cuffs from his coat pocket.
Some might say threatening a colleague's brother is below the belt, but I won't quibble.
Mycroft cuffed him and pulled him to his feet. Burke remained hunched over, panting.
I didn't lay a hand on him.
Which is precisely why I did you the courtesy of not breaking your neck. Stop moaning, Edward. It's unseemly.
Should we applaud? John asked Sherlock dryly.
I don't think he'd appreciate it,
Sherlock replied with a half-smile.
Out of practice, are we, Mycroft?
Mycroft glanced up the stairs with a long, suffering air.
I detest field work.
He knocked on the front door twice and opened it to reveal half a dozen heavily armed men. He gave Burke a none too gentle push in their direction.
Stand down. Send in the cleaners.
John watched Burke and the team disappear from view, feeling the last of his endurance disappear with them. He felt Sherlock's arm go about his shoulders. Mycroft gave Sherlock and John another look.
They won't be long. I suggest you wait in John's room until they're finished. And Sherlock?
Mycroft?
Do try to stay out of trouble for the next few days. I simply cannot attend to matters of the public interest if you constantly require rescuing.